Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Rena Schlager, CPA and PFS. I'm here to talk about protecting and guiding clients with diminishing mental capacity. And in light of the various different ways you can look at this topic, I've broken it into two goals that I have that I'd like to achieve as a result of the podcast. The first is to really discover that the CPA financial advisor is one of the first to recognize many times diminished capacity and also be in a trusted position to protect the client financially and ensure a transition of care. And some of this today may be something that you can recognize or have already dealt with, but these are five or six different real life experiences I've had with clients. And many of them, because of the relationship that you cultivate with your clients, will put them in a position where they feel confident they can contact you about things that they may want to talk to you about before they even broach it with family. And my first example, I'll call her Mrs. H, had five lovely daughters, a husband who, big guy, maybe 6'2", and she was a little like 4'9". It was almost humorous, but they made it work over their 40-plus year marriage. But she called to say, even though we were outside our normal review time, she had something she needed to talk about without her daughter's involvement. And what she relayed to me was that her husband, who had dementia, and was still living at home, and she was managing on her own, was actually being abusive during the night because he was asking for husbandly rights and not 20 minutes later, not remembering, and again, and it was like a rape. And she didn't know how to get out of the circle she was in because she didn't want to upset him. He was very strong, and he overcame her over and over. And with that in mind, we had an emergency family intervention with me having all the daughters in all their different locations on the phone with just her. And we set out a plan to have Mr. Put into a home, and she would not feel guilty because everyone was supporting, you know, her in a protective state. But she could not initiate that discussion with her daughters. And she had this level of guilt because she felt she should be able to work through this. So level one is it is something that you may not realize. It's more than the finances, the level of trust that you can cultivate with your clients so you are that person they call. In this situation, it was actually a physical protection. So I'll bring you along to something that may be more financial, but I had a client who came in and he shyly admitted that he got that phone call from that grandson in Mexico who was asking for money to be wired by Western Union. And he went to Target and he did the whole thing and he sent $5,000 to someone who ended up being a total stranger, money he could not get back. So when we sat and talked about this, his first reaction was, "You cannot tell my family because they're going to think I'm not capable of handling my affairs. This could have been anybody. It was so real. It was so close to everything. And he has like 13 grandchildren. So it's not like he someone called when he didn't have any grandchildren. But I said, well, you know, let's go out an appointment or two, but I am concerned, and we have a great relationship with the kids, but let's go another 6 months. Well, 6 months later, when he had his next appointment, I got a phone call from a local facility about 5 blocks away, and he got on the phone and said, Rena, I'm really close, but I can't find your office. So I actually got in my car, went to the facility, had him follow me to the office, and we agreed it was time to have kids get involved in every future appointment. And then the next thing was to talk about giving up his keys. So there's another perspective of, you know, should I have gotten the family involved sooner? You know, if you've ever made a misstep, do you want everybody to come in at you and say, oh, you've got dementia, you can't be on your own? It is a very gray area when it's time to bring another family, especially if your client's saying, I'm not ready for you to talk to them yet. The third one was actually a call from a missus. And missus called to say, we just came from the doctor, and Mr. was diagnosed with early dementia. And we wanted to, and she wanted to make sure that when they came in, that I handled the appointment to address certain things that needed to be addressed, titling and everything else, with dignity toward him, which she thought, number one, that she could call and say, I want to make sure it happens this way, because some clients are a little intimidated by their advisors, just like they're sometimes intimidated by their lawyers. And I feel gratified that she felt confident enough that she could call and say, you know, I want to make sure you do it this way, because I could take offense and say, of course I would handle it that way. But, you know, you have to give clients space. And it worked out so that there were certain things we addressed in that meeting, but we didn't address everything in that meeting. And we agreed that we'd have a separate meeting with her alone to make sure that anything that was going to be done was done in a proper way and respectful of her husband's dignity. I've got like three more. I'll call her Mrs. Scar. And here's a woman, independent her entire life, and managing her affairs, and getting up there in age, yes. And we normally had an appointment quarterly. An appointment was either on the phone or she came in, a local woman. She had one child in New York and one child in New Jersey. And for a period of time, she wasn't talking to one of them, and then she wasn't talking to the other one, but was talking to the other one. And durable power of attorney changed on and off. But she was responsible for her own affairs. I had a couple of conversations with the daughters with her permission so that they knew me and they knew, you know, what I do with her mom, et cetera. But then I did get a call from one of the daughters, and she was very concerned with what was happening with her mom most recently, but in between my six-month appointments, where the bank accounts, which I do not have a direct line with, was basically wiped out, and so they were looking for money from investments. So we did get mom on the phone. We had a conversation what she was spending money on, which was unlike her prior spending patterns, and it reached a point where the children needed to take over her checkbook, credit cards, everything, and actually create a guardianship. That was a huge process. It was highly emotional. It was not something that she wanted done. And my involvement was primarily in describing my experiences and what was going on. But most of the aspect that prompted the guardianship was actually in that short period of just 6 months where she had literally wiped out her bank accounts, and they had physicians come in, and she had a very accelerated dementia She is still living now independent in Florida, but all her bills and financial handling is with her daughter. She has a little bank account, which is used for her, like almost like petty cash, where she gets money that she can use. And the headache is really on the daughter, who now has to report to the courts and follow guardianship rules. What I didn't realize with guardianship, at least in this case, how it unfolded, there were certain things that had to be prepaid. What she had in investments wasn't much. And we had to actually have a plan to liquidate and create something like $15,000 for certain things that had to be prepaid and in separate accounts according to the courts, which, if it wasn't a court situation, we never would have disrupted her investments for that money. So that was a learning experience. I have Mrs. Sylvia, who was an example of someone who, again, and I have a lot of very independent, responsible women, and she basically wanted me to be her a financial advisor. And when I started working with her, the first job was just identifying everything that she had. And she had stuff all over. She brought in like two different notebooks of statements and papers. Everything was individual. There was no brokerage account. And in one of the appointments, she leaned over to me and said, "So it looks like I have $300,000, correct?" And I leaned forward and I said, "Sylvia, you have $3 million. So, you know, we really need to bring in someone, I think, to help you and me oversee all your holdings so that things are handled in a proper fashion. And I know that I'm talking not only to you, but to the person I will be working with next if someone happened to you." This woman had no children, but she did have a niece in New York. I'm sitting in Fort Myers, Florida. And the niece really didn't want to be bothered and basically was just waiting for poor Sylvia to pass away and receive whatever she would from Sylvia, not in an abusive way. She had her own funds, but she just wasn't interested, and it was kind of a sad thing. However, Sylvia physically started declining, and in a little more humorous mode, when it came to long-term care, I had her sign a document because she had enough funds for comprehensive long-term care insurance. And while she was younger and healthier, she was adamant that she would never be in a facility, independent, assisted, or nursing home. So she ended up purchasing the richest home health policy. And as time went on and with all of this discussion about are starting to fail, we basically just set up the plan that, you know, should something happen, she has home health only. I get a phone call from Sylvia, and she's in the hospital, and she tells me from her hospital bed that her doctor says she cannot go home, which assisted living facility should she select. And I said, "Sylvia, you said you didn't want to ever find yourself in assisted living, and your insurance only covers home health." So we had a little discussion, and my job then was to communicate with the physician, who we did by fax. I wrote a note to the physician to basically say, "You may not be aware that she has this comprehensive home health policy. Can you create a plan of care that would support her at home?" And we did. And the only problem was Sylvia. So the first week she was home, I got a call 7 a.m. in the morning from the home health agency person saying, "Sylvia won't let us in." And I'd have to hang up and call her and say, "Sylvia, if you don't let them in, you go to a nursing home, and that's not where you want to be." And then she'd let them in. And that went on for a week until they stabilized into a regular continuing person who knew to say, "You either go let us in, or Rena says you go to a nursing home." So In that situation, things were really kind of stable and handled well. We would have actually someone come by and pick up her mail and work through her mail for her, be in communication with the niece, but things were, at least stable until Sylvia made a visit to my office, and she was unfortunately one of the people who were targeted with the little sweepstakes mail. And when I looked through her checkbook, she was spending about $1,300 a month on different prize offerings that were all scams. I mean, there was nothing to win. And there was a postcard she showed me where it said, you won $100,000. All you have to do is send us like $1,200. And I ripped it up and I put it in the trash and I said, well, you know, this is not real. And in a very, very, very loud voice, she said, you just cost me $100,000. And that was the end of my relationship with Sylvia. I basically said to her, if you don't understand that this is a scam sweepstakes and they're taking your money, then now we have to bring your niece into the picture. And your niece really has to take over and you know, either find someone she can work with, because I can't have you come into the office and make these accusations when the problem is you're not understanding your mail, you're not making good choices. So we did get the niece back involved, and the niece actually moved her local to her. They did transfer the accounts, and it was okay. Because, I mean, we have to choose our clients to the point where it's certainly not going to be a risk to your reputation. And as long as she had somebody who then finally stepped up to the plate to take care. But all of this is happening while, you know, you have other clients as well. And there's only so many work hours in the day. The most recent thing that I'm living through right now is a client who, luckily, even though she has no children, has a wonderful, wonderful friend. And all these years, we always knew that if something happened to Martha, that her friend would step up. I don't think her friend really understood what step up meant. But now it's reached a point where, you know, Martha is really not able to stay at home unless her friend steps up. And we're doing everything we can with her friend establishing herself as durable power on all the accounts. And I'll have quarterly appointments with her friend, and we just go from there. So why tell you all of these different examples? Well, what were the warning signs out of all of these different examples? The one was there were missed appointments with clients who rarely would have to reschedule. You turn around and you have quarterly schedule, a couple of missed appointments and almost a year could go by. So that's one thing. We reach out to clients to make sure that if we haven't had any contact within 6 months, that we reach out to them to make sure something's not going on. Certainly someone who has been to my office over and over for years and suddenly can't find the office, big flag. I've had situations where people who are normally really well-dressed or, you know, just normally dressed come in slightly more unkempt. You know, maybe they're not shaving. You know, maybe the clothes looks like it's in disarray. You know, we talk about, you know, is anything going on or that kind of thing. And usually it is me in this chair initiating those conversations. I've had scenarios where someone's called maybe more than once a day to talk about the same question, and then I raise the question, do you realize that you have asked me that a couple of times today? And then we bring family in. They may be talkative when they haven't been before, or now they're quiet, and previously they were talkative. They could also be paranoid. I have a client who started exhibiting some concerns about the mail and talking about them, and we had to start bringing her son in on the appointments. And is there someone else maybe that they're talking to that's influencing their decisions? I did have one client who I haven't mentioned. I had her for years, and she did everything to stay in the home she had, which is really too expensive for her to stay in when her husband passed away. And we would meet and go over every expense, go over every investment, every penny just about, and she was wonderful about maintaining where she was. Very close relationship. And then another gentleman became close. He had his own ideas for investing. He was very controlling, and she had brought her in a couple of times, and he never said a word. With her permission, he heard everything that was being done. And then he just reached a point where he said, you know, I think I can manage your things. So I called her when he was not around, and we had a deep conversation. And I said, if something happens to you, I don't want to be put in the position of having to work with him. So I don't like to put you in a position of being in between, like a rock in a hard place. And I am so happy that you've been able to stay in your home all these years. But as long as you don't feel that your situation is abusive at all, and you can agree to the things that he's saying, then let's just agree to make the change, and you move the accounts to wherever he's holding his accounts. And if you ever need me, I am here for you. And I think we need to sever our relationship. Well, that was like on a Thursday, Friday, and I worried all over the weekend, is this going to be like my first complaint? Because I didn't know how she would take it. And I got the most beautiful note from her the following week saying she really appreciated that I left an open door. She really thinks that she thinks it's a good idea that she start working with someone else now that works with him, well with him, so that if something does happen, you know, it's better for her. So all in all, it's a fluid thing to be in the position of a trusted advisor. When things start diminishing, you're in a seat that very few other people in their lives may be in. And you're also not just about seeing it early, but being a little more objective because you don't see them every day. So I hope to speak more about the other areas of diminished capacity when it comes to your clients. And on behalf of the PFP section, this has been Rena Schlager, CPA PFS, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to find the Advisor's Guide to Retirement and Elder Planning. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who'll tell you how to find this valuable resource. And thank you very much for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.